Yes? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes? All right. It doesn't look nearly as beautiful as you look this morning. So turn to the person next to you and tell them, I'm glad you're here today. And tell them, God thinks you're beautiful. Even though I have my serious doubts. No. Don't tell them that part. Don't tell them that part. We're just glad you are here today. And at the end of the service today, we're going to ask you to bring all this food that is around. We're going to tell you what we're going to do with that. We're going to also give you an opportunity to come here and pin something that might be on your heart on this wall. This is our prayer wall. This is a prayer for ourselves, so we're going to leave some notes. Actually, we're going to leave them here because that's going to be covered with food. And you're going to get a chance to interact with our prayer wall, to bring whatever it is in your life that you want to leave at the altar of the Lord. And we're going to bring food. Some people just couldn't help it, and they already brought it, and you can see that. Some of you followed directions, and you kept them next to your tables. Some of us just couldn't follow directions because how much food you brought. So we understand. There's no way you want to sit around all this food. So that's fantastic. And there's already a fridge full of food in the kitchen. So I thank you. It moves my heart. And this is what church should be about. So I want to start talking a little bit about... We're going to talk for about 20 minutes or so. Then we're going to have an interview. We're going to interview somebody very special that's going to tell us a little more about this food. But I want to start by asking some questions. A few weeks ago, we started this thing with the youth of our church who we were encouraged to ask them questions because somebody told us, you know, the youth come to church and they never get to ask questions. You know, they sit around, people come, they listen to sermons. We try to answer questions that nobody's asking sometimes. And we said, let's ask. So we gave the youth class an opportunity to ask questions. How many of you think that's a good idea? Yes? Good. They get to ask questions. And your mind will be blown by the type of questions they asked. So much depth, existential matters. Something like, what is 901 times 30,325 and to the power of 5, I don't know what that is. Deep, deep questions. Or this one, which gets to the core of who we are. What is your middle name? So deep, right? And these are some of the questions we are wrestling with our youth. Yeah, hands up, there we go. Make them proud, guys. Make them proud. Yes. But then they asked other questions, which were really good questions. Like this question, what makes you a good Christian? And I want us to wrestle a little bit with this question because it goes along with many things in our lives. What makes you a good Christian could also be about what makes you a better person or what makes you a good friend. It also relates to another question we've been wrestling, especially last night. If you didn't come last night, you really, really missed out. But you get to at least see some of the thoughts of the ideas that were expressed last night. And you're going to get to pin your own today if you want to. But what makes life significant? And as we were wrestling with this question, something began to happen that made me a bit sad because it all started boiling down to doing the right things. How do you feel about that? Is being a good Christian about doing the right things? Is being a good person about doing the right things? And the more we talked about it, the more we started defining being a good Christian as a person who does this and who does that and who does this other thing. And we almost could create a checklist of what makes a good Christian. How does that make you feel? Makes me a little worried because doing something doesn't necessarily make you something. Would you agree? Doing something doesn't necessarily make you something. Here's something to think about. I brought a little video for you I want to show you. There was a time in the past 5 years or so where these shows were plagued our TVs. They were talent shows, right? The X Factor, Americans Got Talent. Which other one can you think of? American Idol. And our televisions were plagued with all these shows. And I never got hooked on any of it, but I love seeing the epic fail videos. So I brought one for you. It's just 17 seconds. Let's check this out.
Oh,
I hit my tooth. Can I start over?
So a lot of people's dreams were shattered because they realized that just because they can do some noise and something doesn't make them an artist or a singer. Would you agree? And some people came to a very hard realization during those shows to realize that just because certain things we do don't make us necessarily a singer or an artist, because doing something is oftentimes not enough. But there's also comfort in this, because if we do the opposite of this, it is also true. When I was about 10 years younger than I am now, no, let's make it 15, well, that wouldn't add up, yeah, 10 years ago. I wish it was further in the past. Something similar to that happened in my life. I was out with my friends. I was single at the time, and we had gone to a TGI Friday to eat, and we had a nice Saturday night dinner, and after we ate, it was about midnight, we head outside, and it had drizzled, and the pavement was, the parking lot was nice and wet, and I decided that that was the perfect time to do a physics experiment. And I wanted to test the laws of friction and centrifugal forces. So I took my car out, and I wanted to discover how the drizzle had made the pavement more slippery, and how if the car had enough force, it could go in a circle within its own axis. This experiment is often called donuts, you know? And it was a great idea, except that at that very same restaurant, right where I had dinner, were two state troopers and two Bethesda police officers hanging out and having a good time. Right in the middle of my experiment, where I was getting to the final conclusion of whether the experiment worked or not, the whole parking lot lit up with blue and red lights. A K-9 unit came in, inspected the car, and I could have sworn there was a helicopter flying around, but I'm not sure. I cannot verify that. I was in such shock that I don't really see what happened. And in that moment, the police officer comes and knocks on my door. And the first thing he says, "Son, do you want to get locked up tonight?" And I said, "No, sir." And then he told me, then two things can only happen. Either you're drunk or you're stupid. And I wasn't drunk. So that left only one very sad conclusion. And we all relate to this because we've all done dumb things in our life, right? Raise your hand if you haven't done anything silly in your life. And this is where this message is so comforting, because doing something doesn't make you necessarily something. So even though you may have done some dumb things, and I hope that not all of you are going about doing dumb things all the time, it doesn't make you a dumb person or stupid like that police officer assumed about me. So how do we go about the doing and being? Let's look a little bit at Jesus' story to explore a little bit what is this dynamic between doing and being. One of Jesus' best friends, his name was John. The Bible tells us that he was a disciple who was deeply loved. And we could describe him maybe as one of Jesus' best friends. He was the last person to write out of all the authors in the Bible. He tells us this very simple thing. As he was thinking about Jesus, as he was thinking about his friend, he was starting to think about, how am I going to tell the story of this friend of mine? And in John 1:7, he said, "And the Word became flesh, and he dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory." It is interesting how John chooses to describe his friend Jesus. He says that the Word did what? Became flesh. He became something. See, much of what we think about being good, we center a lot about doing. Yet John is trying to get our attention into something perhaps a little taller, a little higher. He said Jesus became flesh. Then he went on to say something else. He said in John 14:3, "And Jesus said to them, I have the way, and I have the truth, and I have the life," right? He said, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. At the very end of Jesus' life, when he's having this last dinner with his disciples, not like my TGI Friday dinner. It was another type of dinner. He was very, very moved. And he is pouring out his heart because he knows that in the following days, his life is going to be given for his friends. And then he tells them this one thing as he's praying. He says, and this is eternal life, that they may know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom you have sent. And then he says, I have glorified you on earth. I have finished the work which you have given me to do. Which was that work? Because he says at that point that he had finished that work. The cross hadn't been accomplished yet. It was about to come. And he was willing. But the whole entire life of Jesus was spent showing us one thing. And that is, who is the Father? Who is God? See, sometimes we think that we have to give the best explanation for who God is. And Jesus came not to give you an explanation of who God is. Jesus came not to say, hey, these are the descriptions and these are the checklists and these are the things that you follow to be a good friend, a good person. No, Jesus said, hey, I am the best explanation of who God is. I didn't come here to tell you what it is. I came here to show you what it is. Because being is a whole lot more than doing. He came to show us that God is our friend. And this simple idea changed the world. We live in a world that loves this concept of love. Right? We see it in vans. We see it in signs. And we came to realize that love is good, and that love is pure, and that love is something great, and that love should be given and should be received. And we know that everybody should be loved and that everybody matters. Yet none of these ideas really became what they are today without Jesus, because it was only Jesus who came to teach that God is love, that God loves everyone, and that everyone matters. And we lose this because we don't really realize the world in which Jesus came. See, Jesus brought about a revolution. Because in Jesus' time, culture was a culture of slavery. And everybody's value was determined by what they could do. The doing was extremely important. And things happened in that culture which may sound a little remote to us, but if you fell ill and you couldn't work and you couldn't pay your bills, you would become a slave to somebody else. And this sounds so foreign and so abstract and so remote. Yet what happens when we don't get to pay our mortgages, when we don't pay our bills? Maybe different, but at the same time so similar. Somebody could come into your country, and they could take you as slaves, and then you were only as valuable as what you could produce. And this sort of view devalues everyone, because you're just one step away from slavery. And Jesus came to say, hey, it is not so with me, because I have a very different way at looking at things, because you are not valued for what you do, you are valued for who you are. And that's what Jesus came to show you, that you are valued for who you are. And this principle of love was redefined through Jesus. It was highlighted through Jesus. And God had shown it all throughout the Old Testament. And in Jesus, this became as true as ever. And this concept was revolutionary, because Jesus taught that everything that we know and hold true comes out from who he is and who we are. So what are some of the things that Jesus taught? Jesus taught that your neighbor is not that person who is like you. Your neighbor is not that person that you like to go out to eat and you are the same sports fan, a team fan, and it's not the person that you share all the common likes in your life, and on Facebook you have all the same friends. No, that's not who your neighbor is. Jesus came to tell you that your neighbor is that person in need, that person who is hurting, that person who somebody needs to make a difference in their lives. He came to tell you that is your neighbor. Not the person who's just like you, but the person who is in need. He also came to tell you that he came to seek that which was lost, not to repay them and not to have vengeance and not to avenge evil, but to forgive and to restore and to bring healing. And he told the stories of lost things, and he said, I came to search lost things. And that's what being good is all about. He also came to tell them in the Sermon on the Mount, he's preaching up there, and he's telling them, love your enemies. Do something kind and beautiful for somebody who will never be able to do that back to you. That is what God is like. That is who he is. Somebody who came to do good, even to somebody who could not do ever any good back to him. He came and showed us that significance comes not from the millions that you can donate, but by a thankful heart who in its richness for millennia has taught the lesson of who God values. That whatever it is that you have, that if you bring it before him, that is significant. And while we don't know anything about the multimillionaires of that time, we still tell the story of this widow who was poor, who had nothing, who simply gave what she had and has brought healing to our lives and giving us hope, because now we know that whatever we give in God's hands can be much, and there are riches in heaven. But if you want to really know what somebody means in what they taught, you also have to look at what they did. And what did Jesus do? He talked to the people that nobody would talk to the people who were marginalized, who were discriminated, who were put aside. He went and he talked to them. He went and he touched the people who were considered untouchables, lepers, who were cast away, who were rejected, who were put away, who nobody could even approach them, who had to cry out, unclean. Jesus came and touched their lives and brought them healing, because that's who Jesus was. And then he went, and with those people who were rejected, like the Matthews, like the tax collector, like Zacchaeus, he went and he spent time with them, and he ate in their homes. And he spent time with them. And then he did this amazing thing. This man, who was a Roman centurion, who was an enemy, who had oppressed his nation, he came and he healed his son. The very same people that would later crucify him in a cross, those Roman soldiers who would drive nails through his hands, those soldiers who would pierce his side, who would whip him till the point of death, he went. And in their time of need, he healed their son. Because that's who God is. A bit later, Paul remembered this image, maybe. And to the very same Romans, the very same people, he wrote and he reminded them this. And I wish you would have been at the lesson today, because we went in depth at this, and I won't do it justice. But he told them something very simple. For if we were enemies, if we were at odds with God, he says, we were reconciled. We became friends to God through the death of his son. And much more, having been reconciled, now our lives will be whole. To this very same Romans, like he had healed the centurion son, now he tells them, hey, at once we were at odds with God. At once our doing was wrong and all these things were just not right. And there was a distance between us and God, and we were enemies with God. But now, through Jesus Christ, because of who he is, we are now reconciled. We are friends with God. And then he said, this is too good. I cannot just keep it to Romans. I'm also going to write it in my letter to the Corinthians. And he said, hey, Corinthians, guess what? You guys are all messed up in all these things. And you got all these things messed up about what you should do and you shouldn't do. But here, know this. Now, all things are of God, who has reconciled us to himself through Jesus Christ, and who has given us now the ministry of reconciliation, the ministry of making friends. That is, that God was in Christ making friends the world to himself, not imputing their trespasses, not considering their doings, because sometimes our doing can make us enemies with God, it would seem. He said, no, he didn't impute their doings, but instead, he committed to us the word of reconciliation, because that is who God is. And the disciples got this, and it changed the world. Because suddenly we came to realize that we are friends of God, and he has made us friends with him, and he didn't take into account all these things. He just took into account Jesus Christ. And now he said, now this reconciliation, this friendship-forming type of life, I give to you. And they really, really got it. Eusebius of Caesarea, he started writing about these Christians. He said, I don't get what these Christians do, what they do. And he started telling these stories that because these Christians were not afraid of death, because they knew that God is their friends. It says that when the plagues came, the smallpox plague that came, killed millions, when nobody, he writes, when nobody would care for them, this is what he writes. He says, all day long, some of them Christians tended to the dying at the burial, countless numbers with no one to care for them. Others gathered together from all parts of the city, and multitude after multitude, and of those withered from famine, and distributed bread to them. Because when they knew that God was their friend, and he called them to befriend other people to him, this is what they did. Later on, another man named Julian wrote that the deeds of these Christians were in everybody's lips, and they glorified the God of the Christians. For wherever they went, people suffering was canceled out. He says that they fed the widows and the orphans, that no one could. And everyone came to know these Christians because their love and compassion and great generosity. Because once we know that God is our friend, it changes who we are and allows us to be brand new people. You may have seen that before, right? Romulus and Remo. This is the tale behind the foundation of the city of Rome. But behind the story hides a very dark, dark reality. See, as you see there, these two babies, these two kids are being nourished by this ugly animal. See, back then, birth control was not as developed as it is now. And what they practiced was a post-birth control. And when parents had kids that they did not want, they simply took them out to the wilderness, to the river, and they left the kids to feather the elements. And they figured out that if those kids were meant to live, they would somehow live. That's where we get all those tales about Tarzan and about all these things. It comes from actually something that happened in the history of our world. Parents who would not want their kids, they would take them out and let them live out their fate. Kids that were unwanted, kids that were discarded. And this is the amazing thing that happened. After the year 33 AD or so, after this Christian revolution began to take place, these Christians would go to the wilderness, and they would seek these children and take them to their homes. These were the children, many times, of the Roman families that were oppressing them. These were the children of their enemies. And they who had no money, they who were poor, they who would share their food because they have all things in common, because some of them were just surviving with nothing more than whatever they could have for dinner that night. They took these children in and raised them as their own, because they came to realize that Jesus was their friend and that Jesus wishes to befriend everybody. And when that happens, it changes who we are, and it leads us to live lives of compassion, generosity, and love towards one another. Because this idea of God being our friend, it could change the world. It could change who we are. It could change our community if we decide to allow who we are to determine what we do. Yet if we only do things just because we're doing them, it makes no difference whatsoever. You can do all the right things. You can say all the right things. But something inside will not be right. But if you are reconciled with God, all the doing will fall in place. Because the artist cannot help but to do art. The singer cannot help but to sing. The Christian cannot help to love if he truly is what he says he is. And I know that's the type of person that you want to be. And I know that's the type of people that we want to be. So today we're going to be doing something. But I want us to know that this doing in itself is meaningless unless the being is right. So before we conclude, I want to invite Karen to come up front. We're going to spend a few minutes talking to Karen. Here we go. All right. Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. Good morning, Karen. Thank you for coming. So who is Karen Sawyer?
Hi. Thank you for having me here today. I'm a member of Greenbrier Presbyterian Church. I'm an elder. I've been a member since 1990, so I'm an old timer.
Okay.
And I also volunteer at the food pantry once a week. And in addition, I sing on the praise team and teach the older children. So,
oh, my goodness.
So I wear a lot of hats.
Okay.
But that's okay. And I'm just overwhelmed already with all the food that you have brought to us today. And so I thank you for that. And praise God.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. Tell me a little bit then about this food pantry. How did that come about? What is that all about?
Well, I was talking to the other lady that works the food pantry, and we were trying to figure out how long this had been going on. We think we've had some sort of food pantry for probably about 20 years.
Wow.
It probably began as an outreach where, even though this is considered an affluent area, we would have people come during the week looking for assistance. And so we started, bringing some food in so that we would have something to give them. Eventually, we would hand out lists for people in the congregation to bring food. Mm-hmm. And some people can't shop or don't want to shop, so they would give monetary donations. And we did that for quite a while. We had a little network with other churches where we could kind of screen people. But about 12 years ago, we started partnering with the local food bank. And so now we're actually a designated location for the food bank. And that's a great benefit because, for one thing, we can go to the food bank, which we do monthly, and we buy food for about 18 cents a pound. Now, sometimes we get a lot of things we could really use. I mean, we pick and choose, but mm-hmm. It just depends on what's there. The other advantage is that they actually, when people go to social services and need assistance, they are given a list of resources, and we are on that list. So they know we're here, and they come to see us.
So what does it take to run a food pantry? I'm guessing you guys are a huge church, and you can do that because you're so big, right?
Right. We have a lot of chairs here, but we really do have a small congregation. But we've made it work, and I have a few notes here. The food pantry now is open Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday from 10 to noon. And we have volunteers that help during the week.
Okay.
We also have volunteers. We need somebody to go to the food bank about once a month. And the food pantry serves about 40 households, and we average anywhere from 60 to 75 people a month.
Wow.
They can come once a month. We give them about 3 days of food, and the applicants are screened. When they come in, they have to provide a photo ID, proof of residence. They have to be a resident of Chesapeake, and names of their children and ages and some other information. And we update that yearly. In addition, we buy food from the food bank about once a month, and that runs us about $300 to $400 a month to buy the food to give out. And this includes the canned goods and meats and produce. And all this we operate solely by donations,
okay,
monetarily and bringing in food.
Wow, wow. Yeah. So, Karen, why do a food pantry? What inspires this?
Well, I guess it, like I said, began because people were coming to the doors needing assistance. I guess we've kind of refined it over the years where we find it works for us. We also do, I forgot to mention, we also do the Thanksgiving and Christmas baskets, which is what you've collected for today. And we try to feed 25 for Thanksgiving and 25 for Christmas. And most of those come from our food pantry, even though if we know somebody in, you know, friends or whatever that are in need, we also will add their name to the list.
Okay.
But we, in addition, we also take a special offering once a month in our congregation. We call it a nickel a meal.
Okay.
And the kids actually take up the offering, and that goes to our food pantry. So that's one way that we collect money through the year. Mm-hmm. And our kids get involved. Last year we had a grocery store where they ran. We actually set up canned goods and non-perishable items, and they priced it, and then they sold it back to the congregation, who in turn donated it back to the food pantry. So, and that was fun for them. So
okay.
they fed about 12 families
okay.
from that, and that we'll probably do that again this year.
Okay. And our desire was to be a part of this, and maybe we can feed as many families as we can this holiday season, so nobody will go hungry.
I don't think anybody's going to be going hungry. This is great.
And everybody will celebrate Thanksgiving and Christmas this year.
Yes.
So, Karen, there's a lot of people here that are inspired by this, because this is the type of people who we want to be. How can we help?
Well, what you've done today is just amazing, and I thank you so much. Anytime you want to donate food, I left copies of a list, just staples, that we give out on a normal basis. You can bring in food. If you want to mark it for the food pantry, put it in the kitchen. We'll know that's what it's for. If you'd like to designate a Saturday periodically when you want to collect food, that would work.
All right. But even with this, you're going to be packing this, you're going to be putting it all together. When's that going to happen? And can people come and help with that? Children?
Sure. Tuesday night we're getting together here at 7 o'clock, and
okay.
we're going to actually wrap the baskets. We do 25 for Thanksgiving, 25 for Christmas. The kids come and decorate the Thanksgiving baskets. And we'll do that Tuesday night so that the food will be put into the baskets.
Okay, okay.
And they're the copy boxes is actually what they are, copy paper boxes.
Very good.
Yeah.
And even after the service, we might even help a little bit organizing this and putting
okay.
it out so it can be ready for distribution.
That's great. And another thing that how we benefit from the food pantry is I have found I've worked there on Mondays for about 2 years now. And the people that come through the doors, many come year after year, we get to know their families, we get to know their stories. We have people that come in that have children with special needs, we have the homeless, we have many seniors, and we have many grandparents that are now taking care of extended families, and we have veterans. So we're able to minister to them, and we've had people come to our service off and on, and So that's a benefit.
Because they know that they're loved here and welcome and cared for, and then trust us, and they want to go on that journey.
Yes.
That's wonderful, Karen. So thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else that we can do to support this ministry beyond what we said?
Well, what you've done today, and like I said, donating food would be great on a regular basis. Or if you'd like to do a monetary donation sometime, that's good. Come Tuesday night if anybody wants to come and help decorate boxes.
All right. Kids are welcome. Yeah. Kids get to do the decoration, and then we get to see them. Then
we have a like of assembly line. The more people we have, the quicker it goes. You have 50 boxes, so that takes a while.
All right. So today we'll organize it a little bit before we leave, and then on Tuesday it'll be decorated and prepared for the families to receive them. Fantastic. Karen, thank you for being with us. And thank you for the opportunity that we have to join fellow friends on this journey.
I'm truly glad to be able to worship. I've been meaning to come for quite a while, so I was glad to have this opportunity.
We thank you for that. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to get ready to sing our closing song. But there's this amazing thing that happened in the Bible. Jesus talked at the end of his life about this two little animals. He talked about the goats, and then he talked about the sheep. And we think that a lot of this conversation has to do with what they did, right? What did he say about them? You fed me, you clothed me, and you visited me, right? I was hungry. But what is most amazing, what makes the difference between these two groups of people, was that they were surprised about their questions. Because one group of people said, God, when did we see you naked? Because you know if we would have known, we would have done it. And that is kind of missing the point. Because the other group said, what? We did that? We didn't know we were doing this. Because their being had been transformed. Everything they did flowed from their friendship with God. They didn't need a list to know what I need to do and what I don't need to do. They didn't need to have all this bullet points. This is what we do. It just was born out of their heart. And when they came to see Jesus Christ, they were surprised. Wow, did we do all this? We were just trying to be who you called us to be. And I pray that that may be a reality in your life. Because I know that that is the type of person that you want to be. Maybe you've been trained to think that being a good Christian is about doing all these things. And today we're doing something. But that doing has to be born out of that friendship that you have with Christ. That relationship that overflows from who you are. Like this beautiful story that we hear of this food pantry where there was a need. We didn't do something strategic just because we wanted to get people. We just wanted to help when there was a need. And lives are being transformed because of that. Because when we are reconciled with God, all our doing will fall in place. But first, we have to surrender to Him. We have to trust Him. And we have to ask God, help us to live how you would like us to live. So this is what I want to invite you to do. As we sing our closing song, the musicians already know they're going to be as far as front as we can, leave as much place as we can. We want to bring to the altar all these things that we have brought. And we want to tell you, God, you are our friend, and we thank you for this. And we want you to use us to befriend more people. Use these humble gifts to bring comfort and joy to the lives of others. But maybe there's something deeper in your heart that you need to leave at the altar today. Maybe there is something in your heart that you're saying, you know, I've been living all my life thinking that being good is about doing and doing and doing and doing and doing. And I never measure up because it doesn't matter how much I do. I still feel like it's not enough. And I feel insignificant, dirty. God says, you're focusing on the wrong thing. Because being my friend is about that. Being my friend. And I will help you to do what you need to do. But you have to be my friend. You have to have that relationship with me. Because I want to reconcile my life to yours. All you have to do is come to the altar. So whatever it is that you need to live in this altar, be it this food or be it something from your heart, I want to invite you to come for as we sing this closing song. If there's something that you need to get off your chest, off your heart, write it in a little note and pin it there on our prayer wall. let God change our being so we don't have to worry about the doing. He'll take care of that if our heart is right with Him. Let's sing.
Please stand with me.
I still see a few more bags laying around. Let's make sure they're all up front. If there's any bag, maybe you didn't bring one, but somebody brought a bunch and they couldn't take them all, make sure they're up here. And we're just thankful to God that we can do this. But this is simply an outpouring of who He is, our friend. I want to close with prayer today. But I pray that as a church, we will be able to increasingly become a friend of God. And by doing that, a friend of our community. Loving those who may never be able to love us back. Love people who will never benefit us in any way. Doing it just because of who God calls us to be. But I want to say a special prayer because maybe some of us need to be reconciled with that God today. Maybe we've been focusing on the doing. Maybe we just never bother much of this, with much of this. Maybe you can disagree with some of the things, and people may disagree with what we believe, but nobody can disagree with our compassion and our generosity, if that is who we are. And maybe today you need to be reconciled with God. You need to say, God, I need to become a friend with you again. I invite you that wherever you are, you will raise your hand as we pray and ask God to help our doing not to be a justification to make us right in any way, but may it be an outpouring of our friendship with Him. Father, I thank you for this opportunity that we have today to love our community. It is good to do good things. It is good to love our neighbor. It is good to follow you and be obedient to you. It is good to live our lives according to how you ask us to do it. But unless that is motivated by friendship with you, if that is not flowing out of our being, it will utterly become meaningless. So I ask you today that this small outpouring of love will simply be a demonstration of who we are. Some of us maybe are visiting here for the first time. Maybe they didn't get the memo, so they feel like, oh, I wasn't able to be a part of this. Yes, yes, you were. You were here. But you call us to be your hands and feet everywhere we go. Maybe today we didn't get to bring some food, but we can go out and touch somebody's life. Even today, even this afternoon. So help us to be who you want us to be. Help us to be your friends. Help us not to focus on doing for doing's sake, but may everything we do, who we are, be an outpouring of who Jesus is. Fact that He reconciled us to Himself in that cross. So Lord, we raise our hand today. Maybe we need that reconciliation today. Maybe there's a storm in our heart. There's something going on and we, like Paul said, we are enemies with you. As we raise our hands, we simply ask that you will reconcile us to you. And may you let us live our lives as your friends. Jesus' precious name. Amen. If you want to stay around for the next few minutes, we're going to sort this and we're going to put it away. And then tonight at 5 o'clock at Tidewater Adventist Academy, you are invited to movie night. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to have a great time for the whole family. We're just glad you're here. We love you and we thank you for being our friends at RGF.